from KQED. Hey, hey, everyone. We are back again from KQED Public Radio. This is Political Breakdown. I'm Marisa Lagos.
Wait.
You're Scott Schaefer.
I am Scott Schaefer. I was going to leave out the title. But anyway, today on The Breakdown, what else? Tuesday's election. It's kind of over.
It's never over.
They're still counting like 4 million ballots as of this morning left to count.
4.4.
It's got to be less than that now, I would say.
Maybe. I don't know. I feel like some of the counties are doing one slow count at a time.
But there have been some updates, and we'll talk about that.
They need to count them, right? Because we still have races that are totally outstanding.
Totally.
Statewide races for insurance commissioner and school's superintendent.
Yep. We're going to be hearing from, actually tonight, one of the candidates who did not win. That's a nice way of saying he lost. State Senator Kevin DeLeon, who ran a very surprisingly close race with Dianne Feinstein. We'll talk with him about that, etc.
And joining us to chew over all of this and the congressional races, some of which are still outstanding, is San Francisco Chronicle senior politics reporter Joe Garofoli. Is that your title, Joe?
Senior political writer.
Okay,
yes,
good.
It is now.
I'm here for the next 30 minutes. I'm here
senior
with two
editor.
Seniors. Two seniors okay. And Marisa.
Nice.
Joe, thanks for coming in.
Oh, it's an honor. It's an honor to be here.
Do you have election withdrawal yet?
No, because it's still going on.
That's right.
Because we are still counting the ballots. We're still waiting to see what will happen in these House races. It never ends.
Never ends.
No, I mean, literally 2020 started like... 2 minutes ago.
2 minutes after midnight.
Maybe
Tuesday.
Next week. Yeah, I mean, so let's start with the top of the ticket. Let's start with the governor's race. How shocked were you guys when Gavin Newsom won?
First of all, people were calling it at 8:01. That's got to be the earliest call
when
of all
John
time.
When John Cox was leading in the early
he was
returns.
Leading. He's actually leading by
those
like 50.
Ballots from Placer came in.
I thought that was a little weird.
I was a little uncomfortable with that, with the early calls. I will not name one of our rival media outlets that called it early. But I was like, well, dude, come on. Like, give some respect to the process here.
Yeah. Well, they all do that, it seems. But maybe it was based on exit polling.
I don't think this outlet was using exit polling.
Yeah, but we all knew, right? It was not a surprise.
No.
I think John Cox claimed he was going to pull it out. But
yes, he said, I'm 100% sure. He said it was a late season stop and a Vallejo he was making. And he said, just go ahead. Californians decide late. Just go ahead and ask Governor Tom Bradley. And then he said, well, you better not ask him because he's dead. So that was an awkward moment.
It's a different Bradley effect.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I do think what's interesting is this 40% threshold we've seen again and again, where you have in recent years these Republican candidates who, are not that serious of candidates in the sense that, like, the party isn't pouring a ton of money into them. They're kind of one-offs. Neil Kashkari had never run before. John Cox had run a bunch, but never won. But they still get that 40%,
That is the core of it. But it's not growing. And the Republican Party in California shows no sign of trying to reach out in different ways.
Yeah.
At some point, when do you read the tea leaves of the state and see what is resonating with voters? They don't. They don't change at all. And there's no sign that they will.
Yeah. I mean, we can talk more about this later, but I think Steve Poizner was sort of like, they were testing the waters there to see if you take the R away from the name and call yourself no party.
Well,
preference.
He was, but I mean, Harmeet Dillon, who's a Republican National Committee chairwoman, was on our show earlier this week. And she's like, well, he's not a Republican if he's not a Republican. And I think that's true. And I think that is sort of this interesting problem because on the one hand, no party preference voters have grown. They do represent a wide spectrum of the political sort of philosophical spectrum, right? It's not just like they're all Democrats who don't want a D next in their name. But you also get that 40% bump by being a Republican.
Right.
Or not a Democrat, maybe.
And the thing about Poizner is I think he's kind of a one-off. I mean, how many people can fund their own campaign,
right,
have done the job before as he has run statewide for governor, has name recognition. So I don't know if that's a path forward. It may be a path forward. People have tried it, but I don't know if he can do it.
Schwarzenegger's the only one who's won.
Yeah, and
that
talk
path.
About a one-off.
Yeah, that's a 1,000% name recognition.
We should say that race is still too close to officially call.
Yes, yes.
Senator Ricardo Lara is up by 100,000 votes or so, but it is it's been trending in Lara's direction. And then the other one's still too close to call, state superintendent race. Two Democrats, Tony Thurman, state assemblyman Marshall Tuck, big charter school advocate that became that proxy fight between the teachers unions and the charter schools. And Thurman is down, but he has been kind of closing that gap.
You know, it's interesting. Poizner, in some ways, his Republican past caught up with him. You know, Ricardo Lara, the Democrat, ran those ads. He just ran his ads from 2010.
Oh, I've never seen that before.
Poizner's ads.
It was Poizner's ad in its entirety. In fact, you wouldn't even know that it was a Ricardo Lara ad, except for it was a flash at the end.
Right.
You know, this is what Poizner used to be.
Which, in some ways, was a signal to Republicans, though. Like, oh, he's one of us, you know?
But we'll see if it worked.
Poizner wanted that.
The campaign was upset because I remember doing a little story on that. They were not too pleased with that.
So let's talk about, first I do want to know, you know, we did a big series here, our colleagues Katie Orr and Miranda Leitzinger, about women running for office called The Long Run. And I think it's worth noting we are going to have, come January, three women in statewide constitutional offices: Eleni Kounalakis for lieutenant governor, Fiona Ma for treasurer, and Betty Yee for controller.
All San Franciscans.
San Franciscans, all Democrats. And, you know, I think that's a big moment for California. Those were not, besides the lieutenant governor race, which was two Democrats, Kounalakis beat out State Senator Ed Hernandez. You know, those weren't very contested races, but right. I do think that, you know, those, both Betty Yee and Fiona Ma have worked long and hard to sort of, you know, grow their name and their constituency within the Democratic Party.
And let's remember how far we still have to come for actual parity. I think eight new legislators in the people are coming into the legislature who are women, and it's still 28% female.
Yeah, very low.
And the national average is 24%, which is insane.
Yeah, and like all the states that have had female governors, we haven't had one yet. You know, it's I'm not sure why, but because, you know, I think Oregon's had one, Washington State's had one, Arizona's had one.
Yes.
So we'll see. But, you know, Gavin Newsom now, Joe, do you think he says he's not running for president. I'm not saying he will, but there's going to be, you know, the national media can't help itself, right?
Oh yeah. I think 2020 is definitely out. I mean, definitely, but I would not be surprised for,
Jerry Brown did it, but
yeah,
how'd that work out?
I think he learns the lesson from that. And the fact that there's going to be, you know, literally almost two dozen people running, or at least sniffing around to run right now, I think it would be foolish on a number of levels. I mean, let alone the fact he has no national network, he doesn't have a national fundraising network.
I mean, he would have to start running today.
And he would have to start running today.
I mean, you know, you would need the constituency of California to get yourself over the finish line. You already have Kamala Harris eyeing a run, Eric Garcetti, L.A. Mayor, Tom Steyer.
Right.
And let's not forget.
Tick, tick, tick.
Michael Avenatti.
Oh, Michael. Oh. Let's
forget him.
I didn't say that. I don't want to risk any lawsuits. So I don't, again, if I say anything badly about it.
Well, let's talk about the ballot measures, because, you know, that's where a lot of the big money was spent this year. That's where we got all the questions at our events, right? I mean, I feel like the candidates people can sort out in some ways, but the ballot measures.
Kidneys.
So, I mean, just big picture here, folks know, but, you know, we passed a bond, $4 billion bond for affordable housing, $1.5 billion bond for a children's hospital construction, another ballot measure that's going to kind of redirect some mental illness funding into housing, but voted down Prop 3, this water bond. And I find it so interesting. I mean, I was doing a panel today and one of the consultants noted, it's not like people just go down the line and vote like no or yes. I mean,
They thought about it.
They thought about it.
And they also voted down Prop 6,
The gas tax.
I'm sorry, the Prop 10 on the rent control, which and
resoundingly.
Everybody resoundingly,
except for San Francisco,
except
by one
for
percentage
San Francisco.
Point.
And we did a story, you know, wondering, okay, so Oakland has rent control, San Francisco has rent control,
Santa Monica, yeah.
Why not? And people there, the response was, we have it, and it's not working for me. The rent's still going up. I still can't find a place to live. And so there was a frustration with it. Also, that ballot measure is a little confusing the way it was written, too.
Well, I think to Marisa's point, you know, props to the voters because, you know, you look, they said no on Prop 6. They're going to keep the gas tax. And then they said, you know, no to 5, which would have given seniors a tax break, you know, for property, you know, selling their homes. And like you said, they said no on the water bond. Which,
but yes,
you know,
on the other bonds.
Yeah, like so it was really, you know, kind of thoughtful.
And the other thing that's jumped out to me, at this point, the highest no is Prop 8, which is a kidney dialysis. And that, to me, that said, I don't why am I voting on this?
Maybe, exactly. But then voters passed Prop 11 overwhelmingly, which is basically letting one industry kind of get out of, you know,
labor laws
that, you know, and so that one's interesting. I mean, it's also interesting, I think, to say, you know, dialysis clinics spent $112 million to kill Prop 8. I mean, that is a lot of money.
Well, it was worth it to them. They would have been capped. They had their profits capped at 15%, and you know that industry makes a lot of money.
$3 billion.
It was not worth it to them, or it was worth it to them.
You know, I think on Prop 10, it's worth noting that the very broad coalition opposing it raised $76 million to do that, and the one man band on the other side, kind of the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, who funded that. I mean, the leader of that
was Michael Weinstein,
joined by some other
I think the SEIU was in on that.
And the Democratic Party, but they didn't put any money behind
it. No, they were kind of quiet about that. And our governor-elect was not for that one also.
He and John Cox agreed on that.
Yes, they agreed on that. But Newsom said, you know, this is something that I'm going to address when I come to the legislature. I don't think he is when that loses in every county except the one he's from.
Well, and the supporters, the supporters of Renkotil kind of, you know, burned a bridge, you know, because there's no incentive for the legislature or the new governor to take it up now.
No politician's going to touch that when they saw how resounding it lost. I mean, Rob Bontis said he's going to come back and do something, maybe do something on condo conversions to limit condo conversions or to do something about rent gouging, but that's not rent control.
No, and we'll see. Wonder if they overreached a little bit, you know, if they could have written that better and done something a little more targeted. I mean, I think it was a very easy sort of message for the other side. But let's talk about one thing. You mentioned the gas tax repeal going down. That was pushed by Republicans, this sort of, you know, attempt to, I think they thought, maybe drive voters to the polls.
Didn't happen.
I mean, what is that? We talked about Poizner. Like, what does that say to you guys about the future of the Republican Party here in California?
You know, as I think Dan Schnur said, there are now in the California Republican congressional district fewer members than the Golden State Warriors have on their roster. It's down to 12. I think the Warriors have 14. So it's, I mean, at some point you can't squeeze any more, you know, seats away from them at some point, although like, Dems may pick up another one or, you know, maybe two.
But it begs the Republican Party to, they have to have some sort of philosophical switch in some way, because right now they are.
Didn't Chad Mays kind of try that?
Isn't that the way forward, though? Don't you think that's the way forward in the state? Because a lot of the NPP folks are former Republicans or dissatisfied Republicans. They've totally lost the Latino vote, that's the largest growing segment of voters here. So, and what are they? They've lost the Asian vote too.
But you know what's interesting? If you look at the maps on how voters skew, there is this huge split between coastal California and inland California, with, you know, some minor exceptions. But like, if you look at the counties John Cox won and the counties that Gavin Newsom won, obviously the population centers are here. But I do feel like it's a lot of a microcosm of what we're seeing nationally, and that there is an opening. It's not that there aren't conservative sort of opinions and values in California. I think it's, to your point earlier, it's like, Scott, it's like speaking to people in a way that sort of acknowledges that maybe they're not, you know, Trump Republicans or Paul Ryan Republicans, they're California Republicans.
Well, and also they tried this, like, go on poverty as a message. And it's not
a deep-seated thing, something they've been talking about for a while. But see, I think Cox had a right message in some way. He said, hey, if we have one of every five people in the state is living in poverty, the Democrats own this.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
You know, but he wasn't the right recipe.
He did not break through for a number of reasons we kind of already discussed. We're going to take a short break. When we get back, we will talk more about all of this and be joined at some point by Kevin DeLeon. You are listening to Political Breakdown from KQED Public Radio.
And welcome back to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer, along with Marisa Lagos, and we're here with San Francisco Chronicle politics reporter Joe Garofoli. Or is it Garofoli?
Well, it's supposed to be Garofoli. in the old countries, let me like to say, it's Garofoli.
And but, he gave up watching the Steelers game to come in. We got to give him a special thing.
Only for you guys would I do that.
I can get you
we'll get
you.
We have internet access. Okay. So, you know, one of the big reasons this year that California was kind of looked at nationally was these congressional races, right? And there was about seven that Hillary Clinton districts that Hillary Clinton won, Republicans held. And then there was these other ones that like ended up sort of being part of the conversation, even though they looked like long shots and were long shots for Democrats. So let's get those out of the way first, right? Tom
McClintock
held onto a seat in District 4 in the Sierra Foothills easily.
Although Jessica Moores may have a future, right?
Yeah.
The Democrat?
We'll see.
No, maybe run for county soup or state legislature or something.
Build up the name recognition.
Devin
Nunes and Andrew Jantz, his Democratic challenger.
Well-funded challenger.
Racked up like almost $20 million in a Central Valley congressional seat where there was kind of no hope for Jantz, but he did it anyway.
People ask me about that all the time. Do you think Jantz has a chance?
Yeah.
And I'm like, no.
No.
He doesn't.
No.
He doesn't. I mean, no, there's no way. No.
And then, of course, the one nobody could stop talking about, Duncan Hunter, out in Congressional District 50 in eastern San Diego County. He got indicted for basically using $250,000 of his campaign money as a personal slush fund.
For him and his rabbit.
threw his wife under the bus about the whole thing. With the indictment looming, the Democratic challenger, Amar Campanajar, still couldn't pull it out. But that one was crazy, right? Because there's all these racial tones and
Muslim
attacks.
Stuff. And let's not forget David Valadao, who seemed under the radar. You
his,
know?
And his
he did
district
really
is,
well.
Is a majority, 15%, 15
plus
points
Dem.
And he continues to win there. He and Denham kind of walk the same line, but for some reason,
Jeff Denham in Modesto,
neighboring district, seems to be more loath than.
Well,
than
let's go to that district because you spent time out there, as did our awesome producer guy,
Marjorie. Turlockians.
That race is still too close to call.
It
Jeff
is.
Denham, the Democratic challenger, is trailing, but very narrowly.
It's about 1,300, I think, votes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And with the late swing to the, you know, it's the later votes usually swing Democratic. So Harder could pull that out. Denham's whole shtick there was to tag Harder as Bay Area Harder.
Right.
As
liberal.
And as
Pelosi.
Bay Area values.
Bay Area values. And that he tapped into a fear there that our way of life is changing here. The Bay Area folks are coming down. Housing prices are going up a lot there. And that tapped into some fear. It was, you know, equivalent to what the president does here
really Republicans did across the nation, which was run against Nancy Pelosi, potentially Speaker-elect Pelosi.
Yes.
Well, yeah, and let's just got to give her, you know, the due. She really unclear if she'll become the speaker, but boy, the thing that stands out for me with her is the discipline brought. Well, there's nobody else, I guess. But, you know, the discipline she brought, she always brought it to the caucus as speaker or as minority leader. But even all
these candidates,
you know, they don't get distracted by Trump, don't get distracted by the caravan, stay on message. And by and large, they did. The health care. Exactly. And I think, you know, you have to give her a lot of credit for that.
And her job in that regard is not going to end when when the Congress comes back, because then the next round of it is going to be, let's impeach, let's ramp up the investigations, because, you know, they don't want to be tagged as the party of investigations, because then that just becomes shouting from both sides, and already people tune out of most of what Washington says.
They got to show they can govern.
What can we do?
Well,
what can they do for
people? And look,
people?
I mean, I don't think it's going to happen, because in the same breath, Trump promised a war with Democrats, as he said he would probably work with them on infrastructure.
Within about 3 minutes.
Pelosi knows that, like, the American people would love to see actually something come out of Washington that could help them. And I think that, you know, it's going to be incumbent on her to kind of skate that line. I mean, we should mention, we can talk about some of those other congressional races too, but Katie Hill did win up in Northern. Democrat did flip the seat, Steve Knight's seat.
Yes.
But to your point, and then we're still waiting, it does look like Dana Rohrabacher could lose his seat to Harley Ruda in Huntington Beach. Mimi Walters and Katie Porter still too close to call. Walters, the Republican incumbent, has been winning. And then Mike Levin won Daryl Issa's seat down in northern San Diego County. But since you brought up Pelosi, I want to just mention, before we get Kevin DeLeon in here, you know, this was a big night also for sitting incumbent Democrats, Pelosi, obviously, but Adam Schiff is about to take over House Intelligence Committee. Maxine Waters, Trump's favorite congresswoman.
That's going to be must-see TV, those committee hearings.
She's going to be on the banking committee. And I mean, I think that both of those, you know, everybody is, of course, focused on Russia and the Mueller investigation, and that's what Schiff will be tapping into. But I think with Waters, it'll be interesting to see,
too. She's going to go right after Wall Street. That's what she's been talking about for months, and that's going to be really interesting to watch.
And I think Schiff, you know, I don't know that people really care about Russia so much, but I think that Schiff, if they're going to use their investigative power, will be more about the administration and things that are, you know, the corruption, the indictments, the scandals. You know, I think that in some ways that is something maybe people care a little more about at this point. I think my sense is people are kind of like almost over
Russia. Us the report.
Of course, Mueller's not done, though. I mean, Mueller hasn't come out.
Show us the Mueller report. That's what people are waiting on.
Of course, but my point is that Adam Schiff, that is his in. That is the way that, you know, the House Intelligence Committee can probe some of this stuff, and that, you know, he is a prosecutor. He's going to go at this very methodically, to your guys' point about Pelosi and being smart. He's not going to throw everything out there at once.
Yeah.
You know,
I think he'll have money to fund the investigation. He'll be able to direct the investigation, unlike before. He was just trying to, you know, save the investigation from Nunes wanted to drive it in a ditch.
Nunes. All right. Well, we are lucky enough to have State Senator Kevin DeLeon on the line. He came up short in his challenge to Dianne Feinstein, but ran a strong race. And Senator DeLeon, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Marissa, how you doing?
Good. I'm here with Joe and Scott. And
Senator, how are you?
Senator, how's it going?
Is that Scott Schaefer?
Yes,
Scott Schaefer,
yes, it is.
And Joe Garofoli.
Joe Garofoli from the Cron. Okay, great. Marissa, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so Senator, tell us how you're feeling. I mean, you showed really well in more Republican strongholds across the state. Was that a surprise to you?
Not necessarily, because I went to the Central Valley and the Inland Empire, and I campaigned hard. I didn't go there just one time or two times. I actually went there on numerous occasions. I always knew that we were going to be greatly outspent, so I tried to do my very best to retail politics, you know, up and down the state of California to the best of my ability. You know, we won 40 counties, many up down the Central Valley, and some of the counties that perhaps I didn't get, but I thought our showing was really good was, for example, Sacramento County. It was about a 5.8 difference, and I think San Diego County was about a 7-point difference. So, we worked really hard.
But speaking honestly now, do you think that was a not Feinstein, anybody but Feinstein vote? I mean, you ran to her left on immigration, on Trump, certainly. Why would a Republican want you?
Well, I can tell you this. I think that when I went to Central Valley and to the Inland Empire, I said very clearly, honestly, I don't care who you voted for in 2016, whether you voted for Trump, Bernie Sanders, or Hillary Clinton. I believe that your children deserve to breathe clean air and drink clean water. I believe that you should have a high wage paying job in the clean energy space. Now, I know that you may disagree with me on a variety of issues, in particular, for example, sanctuary state. I am the author. I never equivocated on my values and standing strong for it. But I think that a lot of folks appreciated, you know, the sheer honesty and the brutal honesty. I will say this, that there are a lot of Democrats and Republicans all over the state of California who are not satisfied with their leadership, and they want to change.
You know, you're part of the leadership in Sacramento. I mean, how much do you think that...
Thank you, Marissa, for reminding me.
Well, I mean, it's funny because I think that there was a narrative that, like, you're running anti-establishment, but you're very much part of the California Democratic Party establishment. I'm curious, though, I mean, what do you see as next for you? What do you want to do now?
You could run for MODOC supervisor because you got, like, 71% up there.
I went up to Humboldt and Mendocino. I went to a lot.
You went all those counties.
I can tell you this.
All those counties.
Amador County. I didn't take anyone for granted, but I'll say this. I'll continue to focus on public service, you know, organizing coalitions to push California into the future, because I just believe that we just can't go along to get along, especially with this president. I think you have to speak truth to power. I think folks appreciated that very much. I think a lot of folks did not give us a chance in hell. I think we proved the pundits, the political intelligentsia class, that if you roll up your sleeves and really work hard and move forward with a positive message, a message of inclusivity, a diversity, that you can actually make, you know, major inroads. Listen, we got outspent 10-1. I think it was roughly, I think approximately more or less, you know, $18 million to slightly under $2 million, $1.85 million. But my team used the money very wisely, and they leveraged so much with very little.
All right. Well, you did get 2.9 million votes for that. So congratulations on, you know, running a strong race, and we will see you back in Sacramento in a couple of weeks.
We will. Well, you know, I am trimmed out, right, Marissa?
I do know that, but I feel like I probably will still see you there. You're not termed out till the end of the year, right?
Tone, like, I guess I'm going to see this guy again.
Well, I guess I was more thinking in like 2 weeks when you guys... All right. Well, thank you for joining us, State Senator De Leon.
Thank you so much. You guys take care.
Thank you, you too.
Take it easy.
All right. Well, since we were just on the Sacramento tip, we should talk about the fact that it does look like Democrats are going to have 2/3 in both houses up there.
Yeah, they're going to snatch that majority, supermajority back from the Republicans, I think, in the Senate,
so does,
which is kind of a mixed blessing
right,
in some ways for Gavin
Newsom.
Does
that make it easier or harder for Gavin?
Oh, my God. Who does he say no to up there? Does he say no to the SEIU who gave him, $4 or $5 billion?
The nurses,
the teachers. I mean, this is going to be a huge test for Newsom. Who does he say no to?
Yeah, and you know, thinking back to Gray Davis when he became governor, and he couldn't say no, and you know, we got some really lucrative contracts for, I think it was the prison guards. And those things have come back to haunt the state in some ways.
I mean, Newsom, though, does have, I think, more of a mandate than Davis did. He did get 60%. And I think he knows that, you know, I mean, it's an interesting one because, yes, there's a lot of people that want a lot of things from him. But I think there's also a recognition in Sacramento, if you hear what legislative leaders are saying, that, like, they don't want to be the ones who put the state back into the red.
Yeah.
It was also very interesting, a good preview the other night at one of his last campaign appearances. Newsom said, you know, I'm very cognizant of with he was standing on stage with Jerry Brown and Kamala Harris. And he said, I'm very protective of Governor Brown's legacy, and I'm going to be very protective of that rainy day fund.
Well, in fact, go ahead.
No, I'm saying, so that may be a preview. We'll see.
Well, I think in some ways, you know, I mean, sooner or later, that recession Jerry Brown's been warning about is going to happen. And in some ways, that wouldn't be a bad thing for him because that'll help him say no. Because, you know, and the things he wants to do, early childhood education, all, you know, that costs money.
I'm going to disagree that a recession is not going to be bad. I mean, I think for Newsom.
Well, a little one.
The cuts that we saw 10 years ago were devastating, and nobody wants to oversee that kind of, you know, cutbacks. And then you do have, like, all these groups. I mean, there's one thing to be said, though, right? There's a sense that it's easier in some ways to say no when there's less money than when we're flush
with money. Well, and Jerry Brown, man, he bought low and he's going to sell high, you know, that he inherited a mess and, you know, he's got a good story to tell.
He'll be watching this all from Calusa. All right. Well, Joe Garofoli, San Francisco Chronicle, senior political writer.
Senior.
Thank you for coming in.
Always. A pleasure to be here. Good to see you
little,
guys.
We got a little tradition here now.
We do. I'm a return guest. Am I one of the first return guests?
Yeah, you are.
We give you a jacket.
I'd be like the Tom Hanks of this show.
All right. Tom Hanks, that does it for this edition
please
of Political
leave on that note,
Breakdown.
Please.
Our producer is Guy Marzorati, engineer, Seal Muller.
Welcome back, Seal. And Ethan Lindsay is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our chief content officer.
I am Scott Schaefer. You can follow me at Scott Schaefer on Twitter.
I'm Marisa Lagos. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at M. Lagos. That is a wrap for this week's Political Breakdown from KQED. We will be back next week with Representative Jackie Speier. We'll see you then.
Bye-bye.